Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, diversity of perspectives. Democratic Congressman Robert Garcia, Republican sheriff from Riverside County, Chad Bianco, who's now running for governor, and Harvey Levin of TMZ, all of them joining us with very different conversations. One of the big issues as we end the week is this crazy, unprecedented meeting between Donald Trump and the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, happening in the Oval Office. That happening right before we recorded all of these conversations. We start with Robert Garcia, who is a member of the DOGE committee investigating Elon Musk. So we talked to him about that. We talked to him about the Ukraine situation. We talked to him about immigration. And we talked to him about some fun stuff, personal issues. So let's begin there. And let's begin by listening to some of that interaction at the White House.
And do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems. Even you, but you have nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future.
God bless, you will not have a war. Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because you're in no position to dictate that.
Remember this.
Scenes from an unprecedented Oval Office meeting between President Trump, Vice President Vance, the President of Ukraine, afterwards President Trump canceling a press conference with Volodymyr Zelensky. Question is, where do we go from here? Joining us right now is the Democratic Congressman Robert Garcia from Long Beach, who is the lone Democrat on the DOGE subcommittee. Congressman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Yeah, happy to be with you.
What went through your mind? You were watching that meeting live unfold.
It was very hard to watch. I mean, you showed a short clip of what was a very long exchange in the Oval Office, a very disrespectful exchange in the Oval Office. One where I think the president not only attacked, of course, Zelensky, but former President Biden, all sorts of other diplomatic efforts. And of course, I think would not and could not get himself to actually say that Vladimir Putin has actually been a horrific actor in all that is happening in Ukraine and across the world. And I think this is the exact type of conflict in our Oval Office that Vladimir Putin is sitting back and enjoying. And that, I think, was what's really dangerous about this moment, is that was disgraceful. It should not have happened. That's a conversation that should have happened behind closed doors. And I'm sorry that the president, the vice president, I think, unfairly attacked Zelensky. And I think that Zelensky is now, we're now in a much more difficult position for diplomacy and for any kind of deal.
The president says it's good to do this out in public for everybody to see what's happening, that it's good to hash it out. What's wrong with that?
Look, I don't think it's ever positive to demean an ally and to belittle the leader of another nation in the Oval Office in front of the news. I think that was very disrespectful. I think that's the type of thing that does nothing to actually move diplomacy forward. And I'm hearing from both Republicans, by the way, and Democrats that are just very concerned about what happened in that meeting. And more importantly, Zelensky was there to try to come up with some kind of agreement with the White House. And we've been very clear that Vladimir Putin attacked Ukraine. And the fact that Donald Trump is unwilling to say that and willing to say and call Zelensky a dictator himself, and that somehow Ukraine provoked Putin to attack, I think is just really shameful. I think we need to be very honest about what happened. Russia attacked Ukraine. Ukraine has been trying to defend itself with the support of the United States and the world community, and Donald Trump is now undermining those efforts.
The politics of this is kind of strange, because you think about the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan's era, Gorbachev, tear down this wall. They were known for being the anti-Russia party. And some of the old school sort of country club Republicans have been huge advocates of Ukraine this entire time. And then you've got Trump, who is on a different page from them. Where does this go? Describe sort of the state of the politics of this in Congress behind the scenes right now.
Well, look, I hope that that we can come up to some kind of agreement to continue to support Ukraine. That is what we've been doing. We should continue to do so. At the same time, like, Ukraine has responsibility, of course, to work with the United States. That is really important. And it's very clear that Europe and the rest of the world is going to have to step up where and when the United States chooses to move and disengage with Ukraine. But with the bigger, more dangerous picture here is that we know that Putin is moving through Ukraine to continue his march to expanding his global footprint. He is a dictator. He's an authoritarian. He is someone that has done great harm to his own people. And we should not be celebrating Vladimir Putin. We should be able to be very clear, look the American people in the eye and say that he is no friend of the United States. And the fact that Donald Trump can't do that is concerning, by the way, not just to Democrats, but also to many Republicans.
Meanwhile, another big story happening in Washington is what's happening with Donald Trump and Elon Musk. Elon Musk running Doge. You are the only Democrat on the Doge subcommittee from California, sort of pushing back on some of what Elon Musk is doing. That committee, subcommittee, is chaired by Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia. Here is a moment from one of the hearings.
In the last Congress, Chairwoman Greene literally showed a pic in our oversight congressional hearing. So I thought I'd bring one as well. Now this, of course, we know is President Elon Musk. He's also the world's richest man. He was the biggest political donor in the last election.
Do you really think Elon Musk is the president, or are you basically just trolling them for attention?
Elon Musk, for all intents and purposes, is the co-president of the United States. Look at the immense power that Donald Trump has given to Elon Musk. It is huge and very disruptive what Elon Musk is right now doing to all of our federal agencies. He is sending out emails, firing thousands and thousands of workers. He's going and cutting programs that he has no legal right to do so. And he's causing massive harm to the American public. And Donald Trump seems to have zero interest in guiding or providing any sort of direction to what Elon Musk is doing. And so absolutely, Elon Musk has been given the freedom to act as a co-governing partner to Donald Trump. There is absolutely no question. And we should be concerned. You know, look at just the FAA. I'm very concerned that now, through the Doge efforts of Elon Musk, we have let go over 400 FAA safety technicians and workers at the same time that we're having very serious collisions and near misses in our skies and around our airports. We know that we need to be hiring more FAA air traffic controllers, not less. And to let go so many people, that's just one example, should be concerning all of us. It's the FAA. It's USAID. It's trying to eliminate the Department of Education, which provides, here in California especially, almost more support to families with disabled children than any other federal agency. And so these are the concerns that we have, and we have to be and demand more transparency from Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
And Elon Musk right now is refusing to even testify before your committee to answer questions about this, which I know is something that you are pushing back on. But that reminds us that the Democrats really don't have that much power right now in the House, the Senate, the White House, or even the Supreme Court. How do you stop this? What is the Democratic plan to fight back effectively and actually achieve results?
Well, I mean, look, I think part of what you said is absolutely right. Republicans control the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. They just passed a budget framework that cuts Medicaid across the country, will cause massive damage in the years ahead with people losing Medicaid coverage. That's on the Republican Party, and we are strongly opposed to that. But we do have the ability to push back on some of the absolute worst policies and ideas that they have. And I'll give you a couple examples. When the Trump administration came forward and tried to cancel grants for nonprofits across the country, we got loud, we spoke out, we organized nonprofits, and they had to retract and push back. When Elon Musk sent his email just last week asking all federal employees to respond with the five things they did the week before, which was completely ridiculous, of course, we pushed back, made noise, and then retracted that effort. And so getting loud, being consistent, being tough, being aggressive does actually work. And this oversight is really, really important. The other option we have is the courts. And the courts have done, I think, a pretty solid job of pushing back on some of the worst ideas that Elon Musk has tried to put forward. But make no mistake about it, there's massive damage being caused right now to our federal institutions. And I fear a lot more is ahead of us.
On that budget framework, Republicans passed the outlines of that budget proposal this week. You said that it's going to cut Medicaid. My colleague in Bakersfield, Will Silverstein, spoke with Republican members from California, Vince Fong and David Valadao. Here's their argument.
The president has been very clear that he does not want to change Medicaid and impact it in any way. And so look at the details. I think that the interesting thing about those who are criticizing the budget resolution is that they have not read it.
The piece of legislation will allow us to continue the positive tax bill that we passed that has a direct impact on people across the district.
So they're saying it won't cut Medicaid, read the bill, and it'll actually cut most people's taxes. What say you?
My colleagues have clearly not read the bill. Here's what's actually in the bill. First, there is a $4 trillion with a T set aside for massive tax cuts for the ultra wealthy. That is in the actual bill. There's basically a savings amount that they're trying to get to of approximately $4 trillion, try to give that away in tax cuts. In this budget framework, there's also $2 trillion that they're trying to get in savings and reductions for healthcare. There's no other way of actually getting healthcare savings reductions unless you go after Medicaid. That is actually what's in our federal healthcare system and how people are actually dependent on their healthcare system, that and Obamacare. And so absolutely they're going after Medicaid. And they may not want to call it and call out what they're actually doing, but that's what they're actually doing. And any independent organization will tell you this. They're going to have to actually vote at some point and put numbers to this actual budget in the near future. So I hope that our colleagues in California do the right thing and vote on those Medicaid cuts.
And if you do look at the independent analysis of this, if they're going to do it the way that they're talking about, there is basically no way to do it without cutting Medicaid, to your point.
That's exactly right. They should be more honest with their constituents about what they're actually doing.
Let's talk immigration real quick. Border crossings have plummeted since Donald Trump took over. Isn't that a good thing that we're cracking down on illegal immigration?
Look, I think I've supported what President Biden did, which was, as you know, border crossings were coming down in the last year and a half, 2 years of the Biden administration. They were already coming down month to month to month because of additional measure that he put on. Of course, we do not want, and I agree, nobody wants, if you are here and you are causing crimes, if you are here causing problems in our country, nobody wants you in this country. We all agree with that. But of course, what the concern is there are people that are actually trying to arrive through legal asylum process that are now being denied that process. A system that was set up to allow them to actually apply for asylum, we're talking about people that are fleeing horrific conditions, has been shut down. So of course, there are going to be impacts of that, but everybody wants a safe and secure border.
As we wrap things up with a couple of quick questions, in a sentence, can you describe Donald Trump's job performance so far?
Disruptive and shameful.
Let's end with something fun. This is what we call personal issues, a chance to get to know some of your cultural favorites. We're going to put 30 seconds up, and this is the first thing that comes to mind. I know you're a big pop culture guy, which I appreciate. So here we go. What is the favorite TV show you've watched recently?
Favorite TV show I've watched recently would have to be, I just got caught up on Andor from Star Wars.
Okay, very nice. What is your favorite book you've read recently?
I'm actually reading right now A Siren's Call by Chris Hayes, and it's great so far, so really enjoying it.
The MSNBC host writing about the attention economy, which we know is in short supply. What's your favorite Oscar movie?
Oh, honestly, probably not going to win, but I love The Wicked. It's awesome.
There we go. I know you're a bit of a sci-fi guy. Do you have a favorite Star Trek character of all time?
Oh, I mean, Star Trek of all time is Jean-Luc Picard. I mean, no question. First of all, I've seen every single Star Trek show, every single movie. Next Generation can't be beat.
I totally agree with that. It's all about Captain Jean-Luc Picard. And this one is for you specifically. What is your favorite RuPaul Drag Race catchphrase?
Oh, man. If you can't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else? Can I get an amen?
Amen. Congressman. Thank you very much. Up next, we have Republican Sheriff Chad Bianco, who I don't think has a catchphrase, but he'll have a different view of the world. Congressman Garcia, thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate the perspective.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Congressman Garcia. Now, we want to go to Sheriff Bianco, who are a very different view from Riverside County. And let's begin there with some of his announcement for governor.
I am here to announce our campaign to be the next governor of California.
Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco recently announced his run for governor of California. He is the most high-profile Republican to enter the race so far. Sheriff Bianco joins us now from Riverside. Sheriff, welcome back to The Issue Is, and congrats on the run.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Was there a specific moment where you decided, I got to run, and I'm the most qualified person in the state to do this job?
I don't think I could identify one moment. I think it was a culmination of probably 32 years of getting to this point, and then specifically the last six in trying to do everything I could to make public safety better, but running into the obstacles in Sacramento that were making it virtually impossible. So it was many things on top of each other, noticing and paying attention to the people that are going to run, that have been talking about running or that have already announced. It's completely obvious. It's the same names and faces of what we all believe are the ones that got us here in this position in the first place. And so to allow someone that created the problem to now say, without saying I'm sorry, say I'm going to fix it, it doesn't work that way. And so it's we believe that the time has come that Californians are fed up and they're going to look for a different direction. And who better to look toward than a 32-year law enforcement leader who has been very successful in Riverside County, one of our largest counties in the state. And we're just going to expand that to the entire state and all of California residents.
Though the politics of this are tough. The Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1. Donald Trump has never topped 40% in this state. Lay out for me the specific path to victory and what Democrats are going to join your coalition.
Yeah, it's a great question, because we have to know and we have to admit that Democrats carry a more numbers than Republicans do. But someone pointed out to me the other day, they added the Democrats and the independents to say that it was something like 70-some%. So, but the reality is it's kind of a misnomer, because the independents way outnumber the Democrats too. So it's not that Democrats are the overwhelmingly largest voting group. It's if you combine Republicans and independents, then we're way bigger than the Democrat group. But the reality of this is I'm not going to make this, and I'm not going to allow what we typically do in elections to make this about Democrats and Republicans. I'm running for all of California. I'm not doing this. I'm not the sheriff of Riverside County for just Republicans. It's for all Riverside County residents. And as the governor, I'm not doing this to attack a Democrat or to say that Republicans are better. I'm saying that we are broken in this state. Our government is failing, and it's going to take someone with an integrity intact background to be able to do that and explain that to all of the California residents. And I think when you approach it with a common sense, at a common sense level, appealing to Californians, not your registered party, that's what's going to get us to the over the top and make us win. And I believe that we're there in California right now.
Well, we know there's a lot of Republicans that have said that before when they're running, that it's not just about the party, and they haven't been able to do it. What's different about you? What's different this time?
I think how you just laid out the question, they all say it. They've all been politicians. There's only been politicians that have run for the position. Other than you get some businessmen, businesswomen that have tried to do it and failed, but they play politics. I'm not going to play politics. Everyone in this state knows exactly who I am. They know exactly my morals, my ethics, my leadership ability, and I'm not going to change that to try and appease a smaller group. I think that what happens is you compromise your integrity and your morals and your ethics sometimes to try and appease to a small group of people, that then it causes you to lose another group of people. So we're going to make this about Californians, not about Republicans and Democrats. You can't change the fact that I'm a Republican, but as long as if we can convince people to get back to a time when this country was seriously great and it was okay that we were Republicans and Democrats and we could disagree on certain things, as long as we were working for the same mission and we cared about other people more than we did ourselves, it was a better time then. And for this campaign, I'm not going to allow what I know is going to be the Democrat side to allow this to be broken into a Democrat versus a Republican thing, or a MAGA versus a Democrat thing, or a California thing. This election, finally, for decades, really, and I could be honest and tell you, going back to when Ronald Reagan was elected governor, there's never been an election for governor that's been about Californians. It's always been about different issues. Mm-hmm. So going back to the time of Reagan, that was about California, and that's what I'm going to make us all talk about for this election.
Yeah. And of course, Republican business people like Meg Whitman and John Cox had run before unsuccessfully for governor. They had never been elected to office before. Are you worried about Rick Caruso running and potentially stealing away some of those Republicans, some of those independents away from you?
No, I'm not worried about anybody running. This is certainly going to be my race, and we're not going to try and, you know, appease to anyone else or be worried about anyone else. I think, to be honest with you, over the last year, even in Democrat circles, independent circles, people were worried about whether or not I was going to get in the race, because they believe that the law and order aspect of where we are in California is going to be one of the main issues, which is 60 to 70% of the issues concern public safety. So honestly, I think Rick Caruso, I think he's a great man. I think he has nothing but the best interests of constituents, whether he's running for mayor or whether he's running for governor. I'm hoping that he truly does care about California. And personally, I would rather see him as the mayor over the Olympics, and I can be the governor. So maybe he'll support me.
There you go. There can be a dual endorsement there. So we know you're passionate about fighting crime. What is one specific policy change that you could implement, even with a potential Democratic supermajority, that would make Californians safer?
We will 100%. I will ensure that I will work with the Democrats in the legislature to ensure that the entire aspects of Prop 47 are done away with. We will repeal AB 109. We will start investing in our jails and our prison systems to not only make more bed space for criminals that harm us, because we have to get to a point where we have to realize that the only way to keep us safe is what you're seeing on screen. They have to be put away. They have to be held accountable, and there has to be a consequence. And when there is no consequence, there's no reason for them not to commit crime. So we're going to have to make this investment. We're going to have to get over this wrong and dishonest emotional argument that of mass incarceration. We have incarceration of criminals. So what we need is stop committing crimes. And if you are going to commit crimes, we're going to put you in prison where you belong and keep you away until you've rehabilitated yourself, or we have, so you're not going to victimize us in public anymore. So public safety is going to be an easy fix for me, because I've known for 30 years where it all went wrong. So putting the right people in place, knowing what we've done in the past that worked and knowing the things that did not work, that's what we're going to do. So, and along those lines, mass incarceration is never the answer. Incarcerating someone, which we have done in the past for simply possessing marijuana, that was dumb. It's always been dumb. So things like that will never happen. We have to use common sense. We have to learn from our past, and we have to use facts and real, truthful, honest data in our decision-making, not emotions and sometimes flat-out lies.
You've said before you don't support California's sanctuary state law, which essentially bars local law enforcement from helping ICE. There was a new statewide poll from PPIC that came out this week. It indicates, and maybe we can put this up on the screen, that 63% of Californians support the idea of the state working separate from the feds to protect the right of illegal immigrants. Do you disagree with that, or why do you think so many people have a different view than you?
I think that was the same that maybe you can, we can put that back up there again, because I think that is my view.
Yeah.
That 63% supported the immigration enforcement and the, and working with the federal government, right?
No, it says the state working separately to support the rights of undocumented immigrants to stay here.
Oh, I got you. I misunderstood the question. So yeah. It depends on the question that you're asking. If you ask the question of, do you support criminals, whether they're here legally or not, whether they're here illegally, that is going to be substantially higher in favor of the same thing that I believe. No one wants criminals in our neighborhoods and our communities. So why we are protecting criminals is beyond me. And the truth about SB 54 is local law enforcement has never been involved in immigration reform. We were lied to again, just like Prop 47, where we were absolutely lied to when things get either on the ballot or when lawmakers pass things, we're lied to about it. We have never, ever, ever been involved with immigration enforcement, except inside our prisons and inside our jails when we were going to release a person that was not in the country here legally in the first place, we would turn them over to ICE. And in Riverside County, our immigrant community wants that to happen. They don't want those criminals being released back into the community. And I do believe that we should not be involved in local immigration sweeps and immigration. That's the job of the federal government. But when those people have violated the trust of the public and victimized us, and we have them in custody, we should be turning them over to ICE, because they didn't come here any longer to make a better life for themselves. They came here to victimize us. And we can't allow that to happen when they're in the country illegally. We have local law enforcement never has cared about whether someone calling 911 was a legal immigrant or an illegal immigrant. We only care about whether someone was victimized and how can we help. And this idea that local law enforcement should be feared because of immigration is additionally endangering our immigrant communities, because now we know just in the last couple of months, they're afraid to report crimes. So they're being victimized. These criminals know that they're easy targets because they're afraid to report, and it's damaging to our communities. Local law enforcement has no business or interest being in that street level immigration enforcement, but we absolutely should be involved when it deals with criminals in our custody, that we have the choice of turning them over to ICE or releasing them back into the community.
We know that you're a big supporter of President Trump. We were with you at the RNC. In a sentence, can you describe Donald Trump's job performance so far?
I think he's done a great job. I don't think that, I mean, I can't say that I like everything, the way it comes across is the things that he says, but his policies are exactly what America wants. His policies of government, of getting rid of government waste, of if he can cut taxes, cut taxes. If he can stop the waste where we can provide a better service instead of wasting that money, that's what we should be doing. The stance that he's taking about America being put first, that should be a no-brainer. The same as what I would say, California should be put first. We should be more important, more concerned about California residents than any other person in the country, or certainly any other country. So I think he's doing a fantastic job. I think the majority of the population knows that he's doing a fantastic job, and he's doing exactly what he told us he was going to do. So that's something that is not a familiar sight with politicians either.
Yeah, it's a long sentence. So what have you learned about leadership from Donald Trump that you would want to implement as California governor?
I don't know if I can answer that, because what I have learned about leadership came from the time I was a child. It came from my grandparents. It came from my dad. It came from my teachers. It came from my high school coaches. It came from my college coach. It came from me coaching middle school and high school girls and boys in strenuous sports. It came from my 32 years in law enforcement of leading people that are placing their lives on the line for other people. So I don't think that I would, I mean, I certainly admire other leaders. I admire their ability to get things done, but my leadership ability is mine. It's been proven. It's been very effective for me. And I'm going to do everything I can to just continue that.
Did you see the a Trump-Zelensky meeting at the Oval Office late this week and the confrontation. What did you make of that?
I saw parts of it. I did not see the entire thing, and I didn't see it was going in and out of meetings and seeing it on television sets, and I heard it on a couple of people's phones. So I don't know what to make of it. I know that it certainly was described as tense. It certainly was confrontational. I think that, you know, even I, my own personal opinions is I think that, you know, President Zelensky has been allowed to say a whole lot of things without being confronted for a couple of years. And I think that the confrontation was long overdue. It's maybe a little odd that it was in that type of a setting, but
and
it happened. So.
And what do you make, because you talked about lessons that we can learn from the Trump administration, what do you make of Elon Musk's role? You're saying that maybe California should do something similar in terms of looking at our books, but what do you say to the government workers who are afraid they're going to potentially lose their jobs?
Yeah, I'm not. While I certainly am a fan of ridding ourselves of government waste, I'm not a fan of paying high taxes, especially when I don't like where it's going or when we don't know where it's going. So even taking my role as sheriff, being the number one spender of taxpayer money in Riverside County, I make absolutely sure that we are doing everything we can to be the most efficient, the most cost-saving, and the most progressive as far as technology and advance that we possibly can to make our Riverside County residents safer at the cheapest cost. So knowing how government works and being in government for so long, especially at this level, I know there is a lot of bureaucratic waste and time-consuming issues that are really a product of overgrown government. So the only thing that I'm not truly a fan of is I know how government works, and I know if you truly use the leadership ability to get to the bottom of it, you may be able to rid the waste over a little bit longer period of time. It doesn't have to be done in an hour, and I think that's what causes all of the anxiety and the angst that people are feeling about thinking that they may lose their jobs. I think that there has to be a much more in-depth exam to make sure that things are real or that they should be continued. I certainly am going to do that because we were able to do that in Riverside County and really change the way we operate. Government operates here. The entire government of Riverside County is more effective because of changes that we made in our organization. So I will approach the exact same way in Sacramento. But we also can't keep our head in the sand and say, you know, that all of government is great and all of government is needed, because the reality is it's not. And our government has become way overbloated. Yeah. I mean, I think in Newsom, it's expanded like three times the amount of cost. So we have to take a look at it.
So it sounds like what you're saying is maybe we need to use a scalpel, not a hammer, and be a little more nuanced.
Yeah. I may have to steal that from you because that's a lot better than my long answer. But okay. I think that's exactly right. And I think when you take that back to leadership ability and how I would approach things, in the law enforcement world, we're problem solvers. And from my entire existence as a deputy, it's about 911 calls. It's someone else's emergency or sometimes mine that we have to go in and immediately fix. And we learned to be successful, you learn that you have to calculate how you're going to fix that problem. You can't go in with a hammer. You've got to go in with a scalpel because every situation is different. So it's a learned skill. And fortunately for me, I've gotten pretty good at it.
Fortunately for you, I don't charge a consulting fee. So there you go. So we're gonna end right here on the issue is with something fun, which we've done with you before. Excuse me. We're going to end right here on the issue is with something fun, which we've done with you before. Personal issues. This is where we do your cultural favorites. First thing that comes to mind. Here we go. So, Sheriff Bianco, who is your favorite band or favorite musician?
Kid Rock.
There you go. Big Trump guy. Favorite sport to play?
There is only one sport. It's baseball.
Is that also your favorite sport to watch, I'm guessing?
Actually, no, I like hockey.
Okay. And in terms of who's your favorite hockey team and favorite baseball team?
Well, I absolutely have to go with the Kings just because I live here and everything else. But baseball, because I'm so personally involved in baseball, it's got to be the Yankees.
Wow. Not the Dodgers. Okay.
Well, I know. I'm glad they won. I am glad they won. But I was a Yankee fan.
Okay. What's your favorite Oscar movie?
Wow. I don't watch too awfully many movies, so I'm not sure about that.
I'm surprised you didn't say Wicked. No, I'm kidding. What is the best way for you to relax?
The best way for me to relax is it doesn't even have to be long, nice little horseback ride.
And over the course of doing this, we've had the pleasure of meeting your beautiful wife, Denise. What does she think about all this and the possibility of being First Lady of California?
Well, she had to be the final decision maker. It had to be up to her and it had to be up to my kids of whether or not I was going to do this. She's all in. She's not sure if she's all into the whole First Lady of California, but I know she's going to make a great one.
All right. Sheriff, thanks so much for joining us. I hope to see you in person sometime soon. Thanks for coming on The Issue Is.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it.
Our thanks to Sheriff Bianco. Now to Harvey Levin on the set of TMZ Live. I was fortunate enough to co-host that show this week, and right afterwards we continued the conversation with a special conversation for The Issue Is. And we began by talking about Harvey's new podcast called Two Angry Men, which he co-hosts with Mark Garagos. And they interviewed this past week Garagos's clients, the Menendez brothers, Lyle and Eric, in prison ahead of their potential resentencing. We start by talking about that. Harvey, welcome back to The Issue Is, and thank you for having us here.
We love having you here.
Congrats on the new podcast, Two Angry Men, which is such a perfect title.
Thank you.
And you have this conversation, which was really eye-opening, with Eric and Lyle Menendez. And it seems like they're transformed men.
They are so transformed. I covered the trials, and I viewed them as spoiled brats, at the very least, in addition to the murders. And I was stunned. Mark Garagos is my co-host. He is their lawyer. And they came on, and they have become thoughtful, responsible, caring. And when I say that, there are things to back it up. I mean, they had no hope of getting out of prison until very recently. Mm-hmm. And with no hope, do you want to improve yourself? Do you want to get a college education? Do you want to start a hospice program? Do you want to work on suicide prevention inside the prison? Do you want to work on green spaces? Can you tolerate the abuse you suffer, like a broken jaw, when people attack you?
Yep.
And they did. And they did so much behind bars that I thought to myself, would I do that? I don't know that I would do what they did.
And so Governor Newsom is now looking at their case, and all of what you just said is potential evidence that will help them get out.
It's what...
Exactly what you want,
It's what Newsom's going to look at.
Right.
And I don't know that it's coincidental that it was a week after we did the podcast that all of a sudden Newsom said, yeah, we're going to do this review, because I thought he was going to wait until the resentencing hearing ran its course.
Yeah.
But... now that he's doing this, now that Newsom has asked the parole board to see if they're rehabilitated, whether they pose a danger, I don't know that it's even relevant to have a resentencing hearing, because it's going to ultimately end up on Newsom's desk, no matter what.
And that resentencing hearing on March 20th and 21st. Meanwhile, the saga in Los Angeles politics continues with L.A. Mayor Karen Bass, this big back and forth. With the fire chief who's now trying to get her.
Your interview with Karen Bass was great.
Thank you.
And I'm not just saying it. It was objectively great and stunning. Some of the things were stunning.
Well, and
about
now,
the warnings.
And now the fire chief's trying to get her job back. Where do you see things with Karen Bass? How do you sort of analyze the situation right now?
I think perception is reality. And I think the perception, whether it's fair or unfair or probably somewhere in between, is that we didn't have strong enough leadership during this calamity. And I think there are a lot of dissatisfied people for various reasons, some of which I think do land on politicians who run the city. Maybe some don't. But I don't think that the perception, which is what's important here, is that Karen Bass was a strong enough leader. I don't know how you feel about that.
You think she can overcome that?
You know, time will tell, and you never know. Look, I mean, George W. Bush was never going to get reelected until 9/11. So things can radically change. So you just never know.
Although that happened 9 months into his
term. I understand. Yeah. No, I understand.
Let's talk also in terms of strong leadership. Republicans think Donald Trump is a very strong leader. On TMZ Live on this day, we talked about his big meeting with Zelensky, which was, you know, like unlike anything we'd ever seen before. How do you assess the state of the Trump presidency right now?
Chaos. I mean, I also think it's controlled chaos. I think Donald Trump has a plan to shake things up because that feeling of shaking things up is what people want. Mm. And it doesn't mean that it's ultimately going to be productive. Maybe some of it will, but clearly some of it won't. But I think shaking things up is the mantra at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue right now. And I think you've seen it with Elon Musk. You just saw it today with Zelensky. Mm-hmm. I have never seen anything like that. It was shocking to me. And we talked about this on TMZ Live. I think in a way Donald Trump's been treated unfairly that he hasn't criticized Putin more. Because if he really wants to broker a peace deal, which I think he does, because I think he loves deals, you don't go after the Russian guy and say he's a dictator. But at the same time, you don't go after the Ukrainian guy and call him a dictator and say he started the war. So it's a weird kind of thing that he's doing, that if he's really applying that principle on one side, why isn't he applying it on the other?
Last time you were on with us on The Issue Is, you kind of went viral for slamming the Democratic Party and the way that they acted during the last election. What do you make of the Democratic response right now? It seems like Trump's got the whole stage to himself and the Democrats almost seem irrelevant.
I think the Republican response is way more important than the Democrat response. I think what happened yesterday with Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, where, and this is going to get me upset even talking about this, but Senator Kennedy, a Republican from Louisiana, stood up and was outraged at the nominee for Solicitor General, who was asked, will the Trump administration follow court orders? And his answer was generally yes. And Senator Kennedy looked at this guy and said, what do you mean by generally? How can you say generally as a lawyer that generally you'll follow the courts? If we do not follow what the courts do, democracy is over. It's over. Mm-hmm. And Senator Kennedy was so strong on this point, and I would be even stronger, because not only should this guy not be confirmed, he should be disbarred. He should be disbarred for saying something like that. And he's not the only one. And I think a little bit lies on the Democrats' side, too. Because when the Dobbs decision came down overturning Roe, there were a lot of people in the Democratic Party saying the court is not legitimate. And you don't want to go down that road. If you disagree with the decision, say you disagree, lobby for a change. But to illegitimize the judicial system is ending democracy. And I think, honestly, what happened yesterday is one of the biggest scares that I've seen in my lifetime. And I think it is incumbent on Republicans to draw a bright line when it comes to this issue.
The phrase constitutional crisis has been way overused to the point where people don't really understand.
But not here.
But that is a genuine constitutional crisis.
Not
here. If there's a court order and people in the executive branch just say, we're not following it, we're just going to do what we want no matter what, that is where the country itself collapses as a concept and then we don't have democracy anymore. Let's hope we don't get to that point.
Any of these nominees who say we don't have to follow what the courts say should be disbarred.
Harvey, we'll leave it there on that uplifting note.
Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Alex.
You. Thanks so much for all the insights. And again, you can check out his podcast, Two Angry Men, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Our thanks to Harvey and to Sheriff Bianco and to Congressman Garcia and to you for listening to this extended edition of The Issue Is. Next week, we will be back with more. In the meantime, we hope you like, subscribe, tell people about our show, and send me notes on social media. Really appreciate that. At Alex Michelson. That's Alex with an E. Have a great week. See you next time.